Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 178 for comics originally released on January 5th, 2011. So we're finally starting the New Year's comics. Starting us off in DC is Steel number 1. This is part of the Reign of Doomsday arc.
Or the beginning of it, I believe. At least as far as...
That would be the start of it, right?
Yeah, the start of it, as long as the cover dress. First time we've seen this cover dress, right?
Yeah, that's why I'm assuming it's the start of it.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's not, then that's kind of bad way to release the comics. But, you know, who knows. This is also one of the first weeks where we get the iconic logo, the and shot of the character and stuff. And frankly, I think it's kind of cool for a one-month event sort of cover thing. I wouldn't want them to always do the covers this way, but I like how they're looking. Now, to me, it seemed like Doomsday was back just completely out of the blue. It's just, bam, he's here, he's fighting Steel and whatever. It's like, well, how? Where did he come from? What's going on?
One would assume that they're going to be exploring that along with all these new capabilities Doomsday seems to have.
Yeah, they added a couple of powers and stuff, and we're just supposed to roll with it. And, you know, I'm kind of okay with that, but you're right. An explanation would not have hurt, and would be interesting to know if we're definitely going to get that or not.
I mean, I liked the story. I mean, it was a good issue, but as a standalone one-shot kind of issue... Or it's really, I mean, it is a one-shot technically, but it's not much of a standalone story because we kind of get dropped in sort of in the middle of something going on. We get a little bit of a flashback to, Steel remembering when he fought Doomsday back during the Death of Superman story arc from, you know, years and years ago. They fight, and, you know, at the conclusion of the story, you're sort of left... You know, there's, like, rumor kicking around, you know, spoiler, you know, on the internet that, you know, Steel dies in this issue. And it's not clear that he does. You know, you don't see necessarily him dead. You know, he could be unconscious. He could be dead and get better. Who knows? But it was enough to put a bit of a frenzy around the issue where, you know, you get the, oh, the issue sold out kind of thing. And in fairness, when I went, I mean, there were plenty of them on the shelf last week at the comic shop, but when I went this week to the comic shop, it was totally sold out at Comics, Toons, and Toys. And, you know, they were, you know, yeah, everyone was checking it out. So the buzz or whatever worked because it, at least at that one, and then I'm seeing, you know, another one of these cases where people are talking about, yeah, there's, you know, orders for second printings, and there's, you know, increased prices on it, and all this kind of stuff, because I don't think people are buying this particular book as much as other DC books, but they're like, oh, you know, maybe something's going on here. So that worked. But the story itself didn't feel that complete, you know what I mean?
Well, first off, when the opening splash page says part one on a one-shot, that kind of goes towards, okay, there's a bigger story to be told here. But I think that was a given with the whole Reign of Doomsday thing on the cover on a one-shot, because, I mean, it's clearly going elsewhere. I thought, as far as this particular issue goes, it was not a bad issue for Steel, other than the what state did it really leave him in at the end. And it actually does, to a degree, stand alone in terms of potentially Steel's involvement in this arc. It did a decent job reestablishing him, gave some of the essential backstory, gave him a chance to be a hero. Didn't really leave him in a great place at the end. As to exactly what state that was, you know, we'll find out. But the part that really kind of bothered me with the end is it says, okay, continued in Outsiders number 37. Well, unfortunately, Outsiders is running a little behind, with number 35 having just come out about 2 weeks ago. So it could be like March, not February, when we see the next part of the storyline. So I had some major issues with, you know, how quickly is this going to roll out? How much momentum is this story going to be able to have by that next part? And also, I was a little confused with Steele's niece, Natasha. When did she lose her powers? What's up with that? Why didn't she have a suit of armor waiting in the ironworks? And I'm kind of wondering, is this sort of a pre-origin story for her next suit of armor, her next identity? Kind of setting up her motivation to where this is what, again, spurns her to go create that new suit of armor, go back into the hero game, and go do whatever she's going to go do.
Oh, I'm in trouble now because I had wondered the same thing about Natasha, and I was hoping you'd be able to tell me what the deal was with her, because I didn't read a lot of series, you know, like, for instance,
she was in 52.
One with Luthor.
Okay, she was in 52 where she got the powers.
Right.
She was in Infinity Inc., where, because at the end of 52, she didn't have powers. In Infinity Inc., she'd gotten kind of new powers as kind of a residual after effect of the Luthor Everyman process. At the end of that, they'd been captured. They were then seen in Teen Titans, where they had been rescued. She wasn't really featured or seen too much specifically there, although she was clearly in that story.
She was in a Jimmy Olsen story.
And then I was going to say, she was in the backup feature in Action Comics with Captain Atom for a while, where she didn't exhibit any powers that I recall. She was working kind of in a, you know, like with the army or with the underground on that magic world or whatever. But I don't know that they really addressed there if she had specifically lost her powers or not, because she was undercover in that respect under a different name. So obviously using her powers might not have been a bright idea. But here they flat out state that she does not have powers. So I don't know what's up with that. It would have been nice to have a couple of footnotes to say, hey, she was last seen here, or something to give us a little bit better context.
Yeah, so I don't know. If you want to see a story that's mostly Steele having a knockdown dragout with Doomsday, you know, they're beating on each other. You got some not really clear what the motivations are for Doomsday. I mean, I kind of know from reading things on the internet, but not from anything that they're telling me in this story, which is usually not a good sign to me, where I know more about a storyline from interviews and stuff that I've read about it than I was actually able to glean from the story itself. That's not, in my opinion, a good thing. You know, that's what it is. And if you see it at your comic shop and you can pick it up. But beyond that, I mean, it seems like, well, it's sold out at my comic shop. It's leading into Outsiders 37, which I think a lot of people are not getting based on its sales numbers. They think they're hoping that this is going to be, this reign of Doomsday is going to pick up and drive some sales, kind of a little mini event maybe, and I don't know exactly where it's going after it, Outsider, so.
I am not sure. I think it's going to go to maybe one or two other titles and stuff, but the fact that it's not really clear to us where to continue the storyline is not good. I mean, for me, I thought it was a decent one-shot. Obviously, it's part of a bigger thing, but, you know, it spotlighted the character appropriately. It got both Steele and Natasha kind of back into the spotlight for a little bit, reestablishing them. So presumably, you know, one or both could play a bigger part in the bigger story there, wherever that may be. I give this a 4 out of 5. I thought it was good. I thought it was solid.
I'm going to give it a 3. It's a high 3, but as a one-shot, I like a one-shot to be a standalone story, and it's like more what they were doing with that Return of Bruce Wayne, you know, kind of stuff, where they were ostensibly one-shots from a sales point of view. So stores would order them, but they didn't really stand alone. They were really part of something else. And I'm not really that big of a fan of how DC tends to do that with their quote-unquote one-shots.
I mean, I see what you're saying, but I thought, yeah, they started in the middle of the action, but doing the in media res stuff is a long-standing storytelling technique. It ended with a very, you know, sense of presumed finality and stuff for these characters.
A sense of finality, but I don't think it actually was a finale. It's just my perception of the story, right?
Well, I mean, clearly it's part one of something. So, I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying you're exactly right in that. But I think it had enough of a sense of closure that it didn't end on a blatant to be continued dun 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 and we got half a story. You know, clearly there is more story to be told, because what's going on with Doomsday, all that stuff. But if your interest was specifically Steel and or Natasha, you got something, a clean in, a clean out. At least more so than we typically get in a lot of these other things, again, like you were saying with the Batman stuff and a few others.
I don't think we got a clean out.
Okay.
On this. I think you got a cliffhanger. It is not resolved at all. And, you know, it kind of leads to Outsiders number 37. And if you bought this as a Steel one-shot, not thinking you're going to have to now buy Outsiders 37 to get the rest of the story, you know, you were kind of wrong, in my opinion. You know, you don't have a complete story here. You've got a clear part one of something with a non-clean out, because I think that they're really teasing something at the end here, just maybe my opinion, but I don't think that's a finality.
Well, clearly they're going somewhere either with what happens with Steel or where Natasha is going. I mean, I agree there's more to happen, but I think you're understating the amount of story content that was in this issue, and that it had a sense of completeness of the issue, not completeness of the over-arc story. Because I agree, there's going to be stuff that spins out of this, but it's not like it's... I personally don't feel it ended on a huge major cliffhanger. It was more of a teaser for, okay, go find out what's going on in Outsiders. But, I mean, until we read that issue, we won't know for sure.
Right. And we can agree to disagree on that, because I think that the panel that they ended on with, you know, Doomsday jumping off right before that, it is something that is...
He's
you know,
going to be built on in the next story part. I agree with that. But it's different to have done that than if they had ended on the middle of the fight of how is that going to get resolved, or something along those lines.
Yeah, well, I'm not convinced that the fight is resolved. And I also don't think that they did a good job of setting up the Reign of Doomsday. You know, based on, again, what I've read, this is the problem when they put out so much material. It's not going to work, not going to be a problem for a lot of people, because they don't read these things necessarily. But, you know, kind of the thrust behind it, they didn't do a good job of setting up the story as the story has been described.
Well, I don't know how it's been described, but I would say they didn't do any job of setting up the story.
Yeah, well, there you go.
This is the setup.
I don't want to spoil it for you. I know you don't like that.
No, I appreciate that.
But, you know, from what they're saying the Reign of Doomsday is and what's going to happen, I got zero setup in this issue. What I got was a fight between Steel and Doomsday with a little bit of setup wrapped around it. And
well, and I see where you're coming from.
It wasn't
from
satisfying to me.
And I get that, but it sounds like it wasn't satisfying because you were judging it based on what you were expecting from the interviews, from the outside material, how your expectations were set. In other words, how the overall plot line had already been spoiled for you, versus I was looking at this issue coming in kind of cold, thinking, okay, I'm going to take it for what it is, and judging the issue just in and of itself, and therefore thought I got a satisfying chunk of story, knowing that there is indeed a bigger story being told here. Whereas, again, you were judging it versus, this is all what they were saying they were doing, I didn't see much of any of that in this issue, therefore I didn't like it, which...
Well, not necessarily. I mean, that's part of it. But again, what's a three? It's a good, solid comic. I'm not saying it sucked. I'm not saying it was terrible. It wasn't a great comic, in my opinion. It was an okay comic. It wasn't even an okay, okay comic with a few problems is a two on our scale, right? I mean, I gave it a three. It was not, to me, a four by any stretch of the imagination of a comic book. You know, when I have this many problems with the story, I'm not going to give it a four.
Well, I guess so. That's where I'm unclear, is what problems did you have with the story as it was told?
As it was told, it was not a good one-shot. It was not, I mean, it was just an extended fight scene with a resolution that I was not satisfied with.
Okay. I mean, I thought, again, they did a good job setting up the characters, getting them back into the limelight and the status quo and stuff. And yes, it was predominantly fight scene, but I think it wasn't just that. But, I mean, I see where you're coming from.
And I didn't even see setup of the characters. I mean, you kind of, other than the flashback, it's just you're starting off with Doomsday coming from where the hell did he come from? And he's beaten on steel.
But again, in the flashbacks, we get enough of the sense of the history and stuff to understand the motivation for Steel, why he's doing what he's doing. We get some of that for Natasha. I mean, it's not like they were assuming we knew everything about those characters going in.
Yep. You're making me rethink on whether I should give it a 2, but I'll stick with the 3.
Okay. Shall we move on to our Marvel pick?
Thanos Imperative Devastation.
Now, no. Everything you were saying about, you know, not being a complete story, all that kind of stuff, this is exactly the abuse of a one-shot I think you thought Steel was. This is something that, you know, it was clear to me as I was reading this, Cosmo was setting up the Annihilators team here. We get a good two-page splash with the team, but overall, this is really Annihilators number one. They set up the team, the premise, and the odds are really good that Annihilators number one itself is not going to recap the origin of the team. Why should they? They just told it. So if somebody reads the real Annihilators number one, presuming it doesn't have that, which I could be wrong on that, and have not read this, they're going to be like, where did this team come from? They're going to be a little lost, a little confused. Why wasn't this in there? Why didn't they just do this as Annihilators number one?
I don't know. Now, the difference that I'll give it is the branding of this within Marvel is, you know, it's kind of like that Marvel cosmic part of the universe. So Marvel has a history of telling the stories in this part of the universe in, you know, bits and pieces and stops and starts, you know, which they're doing for, you know, sales reasons, I'm sure. The fact that this doesn't end, I wasn't going into this with any kind of an expectation that this would be a complete story by any stretch of the imagination. It was sort of a continuation out of the Thanos Imperative, and I know Annihilators is coming along, and it's kind of a setup to that, because that is the continuation of the Abnett and Lanning cosmic part of the universe, and it's kind of an expectation that the story arc that's being told by Abnett and Lanning is going to have this kind of arc to it. Mm-hmm. Whereas on Steel, I was not expecting a Steel one-shot to lead me into Outsiders number 37.
Even though it had been solicited as the start of the Reign of the Doomsday stuff, and right. I think in the solicitation clearly mentioned it was going to kick off.
Let's say expectation was a bad word. I knew it was going to happen, but I didn't see the sense to it. Marvel, there's a clear path. So,
I think both were kind of pitched along similar lines as to this is going to build into something else. The difference for me is I felt with Steel we got a bit cleaner of an end, not to say the, oh, it's all said and done, the Fat Lady sung or anything. Whereas here, you know, I felt that they very much ended on a bit of a cliffhanger of, okay, who is this guy? What's going on? And it was very much a end on a start of a story versus on a pausing point in a story, a chapter break, if you will.
You're going to hate when I rate this.
Probably.
Especially after what I rated Steel. You know, the thing is this story, I love this story. I loved what was going on in it. I loved the character moments. I love Cosmo in general. You know, I love a lot of the scenes in here. To me, there was so much more story going on in this issue than I got in the Steel issue. There were some super cool scenes in it. You know, the big two-page splash I really liked, you know, with the Annihilators and Blastar. I just loved the dialogue that they had Cosmo. I loved the scene where Cosmo's sitting on the, you know,
Silver Surfer. That was great. I mean, it had some good stuff, no question.
You know, the kind of flashback to the final moments with Nova and Star-Lord. You know, for someone who's following along with the cosmic thread that Abnett and Lanning are weaving at Marvel, this is a great book. And I think that's, for me, how that goes. Since I am following along with that kind of cosmic storyline, it just doesn't feel like a one-shot to me in that I just look at it as one of the variously numbered pieces of the Abnett and Lanning cosmic storyline that I need to put into the right order.
Well, and I see where you're coming from there, because the Thanos Imperative just ended, Annihilators is just about to start, so we've got this as a stepping stone between them, and I see all of that, but
yeah,
fundamentally,
as a standalone
it's
one
just
shot.
As much of a one-shot as Steel was.
Sure. You know, and again, expectations. You know, it just, I didn't come into this thinking it was really like a one-shot. I wasn't expecting it to be a one-shot. And I shouldn't have been expecting Reign of Doomsday Part 1 to be a one-shot either. It's just I didn't feel like I got much of a story in that issue. I mean, I got an extended fight scene with a couple of things thrown around the edges. Here, I thought I got a lot of character development. I got a lot of great dialogue. I got a lot of cool scenes. I got some forward character momentum, especially since you had Cosmo going to all these different people on the teams and kind of recruiting them for the Annihilators.
But that's exactly where it played against my expectations. I would have figured we would have gotten that in, I don't know, Annihilators number one. Versus here, I was expecting something that might lead up to, oh, there's a clear need for this, versus just a flashback to, you know, the Thanos Imperative, for where we get that kind of a setup almost immediately retconned in. So, to me, this should have acted as a stepping stone between the two, but not as essentially, again, Annihilators number one. You know, and this to me goes back to the exact sort of a thing you were talking about with what we've seen over on how Batman Inc. was started, how we saw Generation Hope get launched kind of midway into the story. Because where they're looking like they're going to pick up is with this team already assembled and reacting to its first threat or whatever in its own book. Now, part of this is I agree that Abnett and Lanning are doing a great job here. They're just very polished writers. They usually have some good dialogue, some cool visuals. I mean, I loved the bit with Quasar's cape and the whole star field there. I mean, it just makes for a nice visual. But really, this should have this to me had no sense of standaloneness whatsoever. Not going to say what you know if I expected that or not.
I completely agree with you on that. I cannot argue with that in any one bit. This is not a standalone book in any way, shape, or form.
And yeah, it has more story in it, but I'm pretty sure it also has a lot more pages in it than Steel. There's also a lot more characters to where you've got a lot more chance to, you know, show more characterization on different characters, etc. So, I mean, for me, this was a very strong four, a stronger four than Steel, certainly. But it was less one-shot-y in terms of completeness than Steel by a wide margin.
I gave it a 5. You're going to love that, right?
Well,
it stands on how much I liked the issue. I didn't care for the Steel issue. It was an okay issue. I read it. It was like, okay, I read it.
And I can totally understand that.
If I had to fight Doomsday, I read this one, and I came away from it saying, wow, I loved that comic book that I just read. That was a great comic book. And that's the beginning and ending of, you know, maybe I'm trying to find justifications for why I didn't like the Steel issue, as opposed to just saying it was a mediocre issue, in my opinion.
Well, I guess I try to judge stuff a little bit more on both not just my enjoyment, but also the actual slightly more objective quality of the thing. And in quality-wise, they mismarketed this book. It was not what I think it should have been compared to what I think a true issue one of Annihilator should be. Now, if I had to recommend one of these two books to somebody, I would certainly recommend Thanos Imperative Devastation over Steel number one. I agree it's a better book, a more enjoyable book, but as far as how Marvel's positioning the stuff, there's no way I could give this a 5. It's got the wrong cover on it. You know, it is not in any sense a one-shot. Whereas Steel, it's a compartmentalized thing of his story in the bigger arc. Not to say none of that's going to get touched on again. Obviously some of that is, but I don't know. I guess I'm a little confused as to some of the criteria you're using on some of the stuff sometimes. I mean, clearly you enjoyed this a lot more. I get that. I don't I'm not surprised by that or disagree with that. But to have knocked Steel down ostensibly on the it's part one of a bigger arc and it's a one-shot, yet to not mark down Thanos Imperative at all on those same grounds, that's where my confusion comes in.
And, you know, this is where Marvel's training me comes into play. You know, I'm trained by Marvel in the Abnett and Lanning thing to not expect any numbering thing to mean anything as so you, far as the...
And that's fine. If you're using different criteria for the different books, that's cool. I just, you know, need to understand
it's,
that.
It's not a different criteria.
So you're saying you have been trained to expect one thing for this book, therefore different rules apply to this book than applied to Steel. And that's fair because Marvel has indeed trained you that way. They have done this sort of a thing, particularly, like you said, in the cosmic area, time and time again. These are compartmentalized miniseries and one-shots that really, to a certain degree, could have been told in a single ongoing Marvel Cosmic arc, or
right.
storyline or title.
Don't know what to tell you.
Shall we move on to our other book?
ERP, Saints for Sinners, from Radical Comics. Now, this was a lot of comic, 80 pages, and it has a price tag associated with that. It's $5.99, but again, it's 80 pages, which is, you know, four times the story you get in a $2.99 DC book, maybe three and a half-ish times what you get in the $2.99 book for Marvel. So there's a lot here. What is here? I like the art and I like the style, but the storytelling was a little confusing in it to me. You know, it's popping back and forth in time a couple of times. There's some flashback sequences in it that was not that clear to me. Well, I mean, I was able to figure it out, but I had to think about it kind of hard as to what was kind of present day and what was flashback stuff, you know, to Wyatt and Doc. I mean, I kind of like the idea of it, but I was kind of having a hard time easily following the main story thread.
I can see that because I think this is a good story with a not-so-great execution. It's not a bad execution, because like you said, it's got some good art, it's got some good stuff. From my stand, I thought the story was good, but not overly original. It's take Wyatt Earp and friends, bump the time frame a bit. Okay, so you get a slightly futuristic Western. I'm okay with that. That's a cool idea. It doesn't need to be overly original if it's decently executed. And again, they had a solid idea for this, how to get the gunfighting back into the picture and stuff. Okay, that was well set up. Now, to set some of that up, we got a lot of exposition and stuff, particularly from like that splash page of Las Vegas for the next six pages. It's a, and this is the world as it stands kind of thing. Okay, they need to set that up, but it could have been done more fluidly. To me, this read essentially like a summer blockbuster-style story in comic book form. Okay, and, you know, we set up the world, the history, introduce the characters, move to the first major plot point. And I hadn't counted the pages, but yeah, 80 pages, it's a lot of stuff. Now, are the other issues going to be 80 pages also?
I don't know. I think so. It's going to be a heck of a long story if it's the case. This is one of five.
And that's what got me, because where it left off, I was surprised this is a five-part series. I felt, just kind of intrinsically, like we were about a third of the way through the story. And part of that, and I think this is going to go towards some of your other points, other than the jumping around in time, which I completely agree with. They could have done that better and made that a bit clearer and more kind of intuitive to follow. It wasn't unfigureoutable, but again, you had to give it a little, where does this fit in again, a little thought. But there are a lot of pages, or not a lot, there were a couple of pages that were very action sequencey, where, you know, it was a bit too much like a storyboard for a movie in places. The art felt a little too quote-unquote static. I mean, obviously it's comic book art, it is static, but it lacked that sense of comic book motion in a couple of panels. And the pacing felt a little bit more like a movie than a comic book, because I think in some cases the panels for some of what would have been quick action cuts in a movie were too big, making them feel a little slower. And overall, I mean, it's tough to do the summer blockbuster kind of action, you know, kind of, you know, okay, we get the train robbery, we get the gunfight, all that kind of stuff, it's hard to do that really cool, really well in a comic. And they did a okay job on that. But this is one where typically I feel a radical book is a much better comic than just, oh, it's a storyboard for a movie or whatever. This is one where in a couple of places they kind of crossed that line for me, and it felt a little bit more like I'm reading a treatment for a summer blockbuster, because that's typically this kind of a story is something you would see in the movie, and I'm glad they're bringing those kinds of stories that we don't typically see to comics in comics. It was a good comic. It was not a great comic, and I think with a little bit better art direction, maybe with another pass on the editing, this could have gone, up easily a rating or so, in my opinion.
I agree with that, and I think that's maybe part of what it was, is just how the story, and I don't know how they, if they worked full script on this or, whatever, but I think an editor needed to get in here and do a little bit with the pacing of this story and the scene construction from an editor who knows about telling a story in a comic book as opposed to telling a story on screen. Because I think some of these cuts back and forth in time, they work a little better in a movie because visually maybe you can do something to make it clear that you're cutting back and forth. And I've seen that done effectively in a comic book before also. It's just, it didn't work for me in this one. And just dropping in, the occasional, Macau 1 year later, 3 days ago, 3 days forward kind of tag, that wasn't doing it necessarily for me. The other thing I found is that I kept on drawing on my, watching of Tombstone 20 times and, Wyatt Earp movies and things like that to kind of figure out who the different people were and how they kind of related to one another in the Wyatt Earp legend. And it's like, oh, I see this parallel and who Kate is, and I know who this character is. And I think that could have been made clearer in the story and would probably be completely lost on someone who's not as into that kind of stuff as I am.
Fair enough. I can definitely see that. I'll admit that there was a point at which I was going through this that I did pull up the Wikipedia page, both on this particular comic, Earp, Saints for Sinners, and on Wyatt Earp himself, to kind of go see, okay, where are they doing the parallels and stuff like that. But that's kind of a plus and a minus of taking kind of the gunfight at the OK Corral or whatever and bumping it forward in time. There are going to be those parallels that both play into the story and sometimes play against the story. In here, in most cases, I felt it kind of played into it, but given where we end this issue and the whole, okay, this is the OK Corral stuff, first issue, five parts, I'm like, well, what's going to be in like parts four and five? I mean, where all is this going? How big of a story is this?
Well, like for instance, in Tombstone, the OK Corral happens, about halfway through the movie or so.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of other Wyatt Earp story to tell.
True, but where we leave off on this sounds like then it would have been close to the halfway point of that movie. And
yeah, I'm not sure, because I didn't really see, maybe the Pinker, they kind of dropped the Pinkertons in as like the, Clantons / Cowboys or something like that. So, and I can kind of see that, because, you got some of the Western things, like the Pinkertons were not particularly well regarded by pretty much anybody. Kind of hired thugs kind of thing. And I can kind of see the point of that. But,
I thought this was good, was okay. I think in the hands of the right editor or whatever, this could have really bumped up quite a bit. I don't think the editor necessarily did a bad job on this. It was one that, decent read, good, solid, entertaining, certainly benefited from the extra pages. I appreciate the bigger format Radical's doing on this, but I think it had the potential to clean up some of the action sequence art in terms of the size of the panels, the pacing. Again, the art was very good. I don't want to say it's like it was badly drawn or it wasn't. But fix the pacing there, clean up the timeline a little in some of the early stuff, find a better way to introduce the information other than 6 pages of exposition, and this, again, could have really gone from, it's a good comic, to, wow, this is really impressive. For me, I give this a strong 3. I enjoyed it, but on a technical level, I think there were things that could have and probably should have been done a little better.
I was at the same place on this. I couldn't notch it up to a 4. There were a lot of... it was okay. You know, it was good, particularly for people who are big fans of the kind of Wyatt Earp storyline. And again, like you said, I'm not going to dismiss something out of hand because it's, you know, the concept is, you know, let's take Wyatt Earp and his story and kind of set it into a sort of a future or modern type of setting, you know, that's not the Old West, and you have all those parallels. Well, sure. I mean, by its very nature, it's not terribly original because you're basing it off of the Wyatt Earp thing. But I don't have a problem with that. I think it's cool. It's just the execution on this could have been a little better. Now, that said, I really like the art, but, you know, I think art editing, at least for story flow and pacing, could have helped this out a lot.
Yeah.
So you were working pretty hard this week. You didn't get a chance to read too many other books.
I did make a point of reading Who is Jake Ellis, because you had mentioned last week you wanted to talk about that briefly. And then because you would email me, I looked at that Sneak Peeks comic.
Okay. What do you think of Who is Jake Ellis?
I thought it was a really good read. I thought it was, to an extent, it almost seemed like an interesting twist on Dead Man, where instead of possessing somebody, he's acting like a guardian angel of sorts. I could be totally wrong on that take on that, but that was kind of the feel I got, and it read well.
Yeah, I thought the same way, but it does kind of leave you with that Jake, with that feeling, you know, who is Jake Ellis? Who is this guy? What's the deal with him? And it set you up into the rest of the series with that, and I thought it was one where, you know, you see the title, Who is Jake Ellis? And then I read the comic, and I was like, you know, that's a really good title for this story. Wouldn't have expected it.
And it's a good twist on kind of the buddy film, I want to say, but the buddy story kind of mentality, where you've got, you know, what looks to be a good action-adventure-y kind of thing, and one guy's real, one guy maybe not so much, or, you know, again, can't be seen by everybody, etc. So I thought that was cool. I was pleased with that. I enjoyed that. I need to order the other couple, because I think I just ordered the one, but I'm not positive.
Mm-hmm. So I like that one a lot. And then some of the other ones I read, you know, kind of first out of the box, as always, I read The Walking Dead, number 80.
I did read that one too, actually. That was the only other one I got to other than the sneak peek.
And, you know, just like every issue, it's like, you know, okay, you know. It had a kind of the kind of cliffhanger that Kirkman is known for, a little different kind of cliffhanger in this, you know, episode, but more of a, yeah, okay, how's that going to play out? Nice moment, good solid issue. Read Sweet Tooth and Superboy, my Jeff Lemire duo. Sweet Tooth number 17 and Superboy number 3. Really enjoyed both of those. I did go ahead and pick up that Weird Worlds number 1 that came out. You know, I had not originally ordered that. I browsed through it at the comic shop last week, and you know, I like it's an anthology, right? I really like the Kevin Maguire issue. I mean, part of the story, rather. It's 10 pages of that. It's 30 pages in the issue. It's 3 10-page stories. So you got Lobo, you got this garbage man that is slightly reminiscent of, you know, the original Swamp Thing origin to me. And you got Lobo, which, if you like Lobo, you know, it's Lobo-y. What really, to me, carried the issue was the Kevin Maguire part.
You had started a new thread on the forum about the Dark Horse Presents, the price point on that, and how it's an anthology. And what that really got me thinking, and I put up on the forum, and I'd like to know what our listeners kind of think of this, is when you've got these 10-page, 12-page stories or whatever, I would love to see publishers experiment a little bit more with that slimline format. Just go put that Lobo story in one thing. Put that Garbage Man in another one. Put that Kevin Maguire one in another one. do those at a $1.50 price or a buck price or what, as cheap as you can afford to make them at that slimline format, obviously without losing your shirt or whatever. But allow us, I mean, imagine if the backup features for Blue Beetle and a few of these others had been solo things where people who didn't care about booster gold could still have picked that up and not feel like they were getting gouged. Same here. If you only want one of those three stories in that book, do you really want to have to go pay for the other two?
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, the point I was, at least for me, the thing that was getting me on the Dark Horse one, and it's only solicited, right? But it's supposed to be 80 pages, no ads, I mean, 80 story pages, kind of like this ERP book from
Radical,
drawing a blank there, duh. But the difference is what was the price point? It was like $8.99.
Yeah,
on the Dark Horse percents. So, you know, okay, 80 pages for $8.99. You know,
it's
similar to this one. I mean, I can't say that it's different, right?
But it's two parts of the price point. It's what's the price per page? Are we getting gouged in that respect? And then what's the total price? Do I want to risk $9 on that? You know, or would I try something out if it was a 99-cent or a $1.25 or something for each of these three parts? Even if I bought all three and it wound up being more expensive than the one issue,
right?
I could at least pick which ones I got.
I mean, it's actually cheaper per page, you know, than this Weird Worlds book. It's just that I'm at the shop, I see Weird Worlds, it's $3.99. While I'm not the greatest fan in the world of the $3.99 price point, there's a difference between having $3.99 staring me in the face and having $8.99 staring me in the face. And that's the difference is that there's a certain price point at which, you know, at which time you start saying, wow, that's really a lot of money. And, you know, Hassan on the forums, well, it's like a mini trade. And it's like, well, kind of, but kind of not, because I think of a trade as...
Well, it's got the length, you know, of a trade, but not the contents.
Kind of, yeah, it's got the length of a trade, but not the content of a trade. You know, a trade usually is telling a cohesive story arc, not a bunch of, you know, 10 to 15 page story fragments.
It's like the difference between a prose novel and a prose collection of short stories. It could be
right.
The same page count, but personally, I usually find the novel to be a much faster read, because at the end of each short story in the collection, I've got a good stopping point. Well, let me go get something to drink, let me go do something else, versus pulling me into the next. So that sort of anthology mentality has very different ramifications than a continued story, even if the page count is the same.
No, agreed. So, you know, you get right down to it, and I was feeling, you know, as far as Weird Worlds go, I mean, I liked it. I mostly liked it based on the Kevin Maguire part. I read, and they were okay. I would give the Kevin Maguire Tanga story a high 4 out of 5, and Lobo, it was okay. It was like a 3, and I'd give the Garbage Man one like a high 3 maybe. But, you know, if someone's like a big Lobo fan, you haven't seen a good solo Lobo story. I mean, Lobo's okay. I'm not a huge Lobo fan. So I can see if you're a big Lobo fan, you know, you haven't seen a good Lobo series for a while, you might want to pick it up just based on that. You know, that was my thought on that one. Then I read the second issue of Rider on the Storm from Radical. I really liked that series. That one, you know, stylistically, I like the painted art. It's the story's flowing pretty good. You got some really cool revelations about the writer character, and I'm looking forward to how that's going to finish off in the next issue. So I really like that Rider on the Storm a lot. I read Doc Macabre from IDW. I love the first issue. Second issue, same thing. It was really good. Marine Man, number 2, I read. And that one was pretty cool because you kind of moved out of the talking heads sort of thing you had and got a little bit of revelation into the Steve Ocean. And I don't want to spoil it for you, but you actually got some stuff that's going to, you know, set us up for more of the Marine Man stuff going on in later issues of the series. So that was a good, nice, good, solid book. And then I read the Starman Kongorilla one-shot, which I got a little more feeling that, you know, something went on in this issue, but it was, again, it was more of just set up for future Justice League stories, which, you know, probably to be expected since both those are in the Justice League. Then I read the Knights of the Dinner Table Black Hands, which somewhat disappointed in that one from a continuity standpoint, just because it was, you know, the 2010 special number one, 2010 special number two. This is special number two, and it doesn't finish the story. It's like continued in the yet to be solicited Black Hands 2011 special number one, you know, and just make a Black Hand series, you know. So I don't think Kenzer Co. is particularly benefiting from, you know, having two-issue series. I don't think stores are going to be, you know, like, they haven't been trained, like, with Marvel and DC, you know. It's like gamers and people who buy this kind of stuff are going to buy it, whether it's number three or number one, you know. So, anyway, now it's move and look at this sneak peeks thing. And the question I had on the sneak peeks was, I'm looking at the thing, and it's got variant numbers of pages for the things that they're previewing in here, right? So you got Ultimate Captain America, and they show you three pages of that. And then we got the Thanos Imperative Devastation, and all they show is that one shot, you know,
the middle splash, double page splash, you know, from the middle, yeah.
Generously six words on it. You know, you got.
I thought that preview was a complete joke.
Yeah, and that's where I was kind of going with it. You know, you got Namor, you got like three pages, you know, and you got Captain America, Hail Hydra, which I thought was the most effective one because you got five pages and there was enough of something there that, you know, I could read that and say, oh, you know, that looks like it's kind of a cool World War II Cap and Bucky story. I think I'd maybe want to read more of that. And then you got the Daredevil Reborn that they gave five pages of, but I didn't care. You know, then they had X-Men. It's just, I guess the question I had was, if you were not planning to get one of these series in the first place, would what they showed you here have helped change your mind?
I think it depends why somebody was not planning on getting a particular one, if they were on the fence or had specifically decided against it, and really which one. Because I think there's a couple things, like the Wolverine and Jubilee, if somebody's saying, well, geez, it's another Wolverine story, and they'd read that and they'd realize, well, actually, this may have some decent Jubilee stuff, and explain why those two are going to pair back up or whatever for some adventures. I mean, maybe it could kick somebody over the fence. Thanos Imperative? No, not at all. I mean, come on. We get, the one splash page, couple of words, and it's not, I mean, technically, I guess it is continued in, but once upon a time, the idea behind Marvel previews was that they would include various preview pages of the comics so we could see this sort of a thing in the catalog. Now we're getting this as a one-shot just for January. I don't know if this is going to be a recurring thing or not, but maybe when people were ordering the stuff, this would have helped, but at this point, it's a little too late. Either it's on the shelf or it's not. And I think picking random pages of a comic as a preview is really a mixed bag. I think it also has the potential of backfiring, because then when you actually read those comics, and it's cool, you know, I'm reading these couple of pages, it just seems so, you know, I don't say repetitive, because typically people will have forgotten that they had read this stuff before, and it would have just seemed uninspired, and therefore leeching the power of the story when they actually read the full story. I think this is an interesting marketing attempt. I doubt it's going to have much impact. I think they could have used these pages maybe a little bit better. They're at least trying something, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, I would have picked different pages in some cases. I think, as you said, I mean, the Jubilee one, I think those were picked well. I think the Cap Hydra ones were picked well. I mean, nothing about those Ultimate Captain America pages.
I thought those were a decent pick.
I kind of looked at them and was like, yeah, oh well. But, you know, I'm kind of off that. I would have picked absolutely different pages for Thanos Imperative.
Oh, totally, totally. I would have probably picked the last two and done that for Annihilators number one.
I would have maybe, instead of having Thanos Imperative and Namor number 6, you know, with 2 pages and 4 pages respectively, and it's like, even for the Namor one, that whole page with the kind of cover or whatever was a waste, in my opinion. You know, just kind of done one thing and done enough of a chunk to get somebody. And I would have said, you know, trying to pull people into the Abnett and Lanning cosmic thing would have probably been better there.
I think we've got a long history of showing that giving preview pages like this is unsuccessful. How many times have we seen in the back of a Marvel or DC comic a couple of pages previewing some book that they do across the line that week or whatever, and really, by and large, we don't see those things doing any better than they would have otherwise, it seems like. I mean, none of the things that have been spotlighted in that respect in the past have really been burning up the sales charts. That wouldn't have been a decent bet that they would have done that otherwise anyways. So I really doubt that we're going to see any huge surge in sales on the couple of books featured in this because of this.
Yeah. I read that Daredevil Reborn stuff that I'm skipping, and all this did was say, boy, I'm glad I didn't order that.
And I think that's typically what it does, is it reinforces the opinion people already have. Yes, it gets the material in front of people who may not have seen it otherwise, but really, if giving people a couple of pages would make people love the book, then you would think reading the entire issue would make them buy the next issue, and we always have attrition. So I think they need to rethink how they market.
Yeah, so that was that.
So, anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
That does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Wonder Girl number 1 from DC, Chaos War Dead Avengers number 3 from Marvel, and The Infinite Vacation number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.